I'm Scott Dowd from Classical 90.5, and this is the conductor for this evening's concert, Scott Yu. And we want to thank you all for being here this evening. And remember, as we go through, and I say this every time, but this is a conversation. So we want to hear from you. If you have questions or comments, if you have thoughts about the music, please. Let's hear them so that we can have a dialogue. I'm so glad to see you bringing your instrument too.
You don't want to hear me sing. So.
And thanks too for bringing a little California weather with you.
Is this warmer than normal?
This is the first nice day we've had in months.
I don't actually live in California, but I spent enough time there. Well, I pay a little bit of tax there.
I see.
So I can claim that I'm Californian.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, let's talk a little bit about tonight's program.
Sure.
Now, the Mozart is a really nice, beautiful little piece. It's a relatively early work. But I want to talk first about the
Written
Schumann.
When he was 23.
And it's really, it's called a symphony, but it's really sort of an overture that's been elaborated.
You're talking about the Mozart?
Yeah.
Yes, the Mozart is interesting. It's in the key of G major. How facile are you guys with keys and things like that? Is it a little bit Greek to you, or okay? Well, basically, folks, there are many ways. For example, you can do this. Oops. Hold on. Okay, that's the national anthem in A major. Now. That's in B flat major. That's B major, and so forth and so on. Do you hear that they all have a little different color? And it's not just, you know, whether Rosie O'Donnell can reach the high note. That's not really what it's about. It's the coloring of each key. It has its own DNA, just as if you paint your wall in your house beige. It's what kind of beige is it? It's very important. So Mozart, like a lot of composers, each key had a different association. For example, G minor. It's a very unhappy key. That's his string quintet in G minor. Also very unhappy, but not fierce unhappy. Sort of more of a mournful thing. Also, not really violent minor key, but just something is unsettled, okay? Now, on the other hand, sorry. G major is a key. The most famous key, by the way, for me is C minor, because that's a C minor piece, okay? That's a very important key to Beethoven. Beethoven's most fierce music was in C minor. Okay, so when we think about G major and Mozart, we think about. It's violin concerto. His flute concerto, and, of course, his Eine kleine Nachtmusik, a little night music. And those are all pieces in G major. This 32nd symphony is another G major piece. So in a certain way, it has the same feeling. It has the same, it's the same shade of red as this red. So how does it go? But Mozart is if nothing else, he's an innovator. So what you're going to hear in this piece, okay, let's count with me. Count 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, do you see how it's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And that's how music is. Silent night, yee-dee-da-da-da-da. Bum ba da dum ba da da ba 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 bum bum be da da ba ba da da ba ba da 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 ba 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 ba. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's the way 85% of the music that you listen to. Britney Spears, 1, 2, 3, 4. Snoop Dogg, 1, 2, 3, 4. Sinatra, 3 coins in a fountain. I don't know the words. Four. That's the way Western music works. It's all based on powers of two. So 2 bars, 4 bars, or 8 bars. Okay. Now, count with me. 1, 2, 3, 4.
2, 3, 4.
5, 6. 1, 2. So it's bum ba bum ba dee bum ba dee bum, 2 extra bars, and then again dee dee da 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 dee dum bum, and then again bum ba bum ba dee. So by adding that extra, see, these composers were very smart. They knew what they were doing. So it's not that he, oops, I wrote 2 extra bars. No, these things were very, very well planned out. When they add extra bars, they want to add something, right? It's not an accident. You know, in New York, we have this mattress commercial, 1-800-MATTRESS, but MATTRESS has too many numbers for phone numbers, so they say, their slogan is, leave the extra S off for savings. Okay, there's no such thing with classical music, because these people are not going to leave off an extra bar because they didn't have enough ink. It just doesn't happen. So Mozart adds bars, he subtracts bars. One of the things I would suggest you do, if you have never heard this piece, is count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4. Figure out where 1 is. It's interesting, because that's part of your journey as listeners listening to this Mozart 32nd Symphony.
We're also very happy to have Bjorn Sang here tonight, who is going to be the soloist for the Shostakovich Concerto No. 1.
Yes.
And thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Now, let's talk quickly about this piece. It was written for, or dedicated to, Mstislav Rostropovich.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I think both of Shostakovich's concertos.
Both concerto, yes. Not the sonata, but the
concerto. Some interesting things happening in this piece, especially in the very beginning, because we see both sides of Schumann's personality. We see the in the low strings, where he's sort of wandering a bit, contrasted with the very direct fanfare, brass fanfare at the beginning, and I'll let you all take it from there.
Wait, are you talking about the Shostakovich?
Shostakovich.
Or the
Shostakovich. Yes. Oh, Schumann. Sorry, the Schumann.
Sorry.
I skipped Shostakovich.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's okay. Well, you know, the Shostakovich concerto is an interesting one. I want to mention that Bjorn actually auditioned for Rostropovich when he was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, and Rostropovich hired him to play a concerto with the National Symphony at that time. So I guess you could kind of consider Rostropovich to be kind of a mentor for you know, in many ways. Shostakovich's concerto really was kind of a revolutionary piece, because, you know, at that time, you know, the Prokofiev wrote a concerto called the Symphony Concertante, but it wasn't that well received by the public. It's still not played that often. You don't play that much, right?
No, it's not played all that often.
It's a great piece.
It's a great piece. I think the third movement rambles a bit, and that contributes to it. But it's like almost an hour-long piece.
Right.
Yeah.
But the Shostakovich cello concerto is this taut, compact piece of music. I wish you brought your. You want to bring your cello?
Well,
I get it.
Let me ask you a question before you run off to get your cello. I've read about your playing style, and it's described as the old style of playing. Tell me more about that, and what it means to favor the old style, and what is that contrasted with the new style?
Well, it's interesting that we mentioned the name Rostropovich, because. When you listen to his old recordings, it's very different from the last 30 years or so of his playing. He played in this old style of playing, which is a more lyrical way of playing. We think of Heifetz and Piatigorsky as the models of that, lots of shifts that were very tastefully done. And Rostropovich did that a lot. And then all of a sudden, for some reason, he turned it off, and he never heard a shift at all. But that's what I sort of equate as and the discreet use of or generous but really calculated use of vibrato, mm-hmm. I think is also a characteristic of that.
Okay. You were talking about the different colors of the keys. Instruments have different colors. When you're playing Shostakovich, do you have an instrument that's different than when you play Bach?
Oh, do I use a physical?
Yeah,
No, I mean, if I could afford to.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
It would be nice, yeah. You have your Ferrari that can go 180 miles an hour, and that's what you would need for this concerto, because when I play, my cello is really well-suited to chamber music in the sense that it's really for a smaller hall, maybe a 500-seat hall. When I play in this hall, which is, 2,500 seats, mm-hmm. I think, yep. I never play softer than mezzo forte. Never, So I'm. If you were to look at where the rosin is on my on the string, this afternoon I played some Bach, so it's further away from the bridge. But tonight I'll play just within the inch and a half of the bridge, and that's it.
Okay. The bridge, ladies and gentlemen, is this piece of wood here, and it maintains tension between this end and this end. It creates a triangle for the string, and that's what Bion is referring to when he says bridge. Yeah. The closer you are to the bridge, to this point, the longer the string has to vibrate transversely. But you lose a slight amount in terms of, I would say, tonal subtlety. The more you play this way, I can demonstrate, if you play here, I can play quite loud. If I play here, I can get a nicer color. And what Bion is talking about is playing more the first way than the second way.
Yeah, and of course the piece does sort of warrant that, when I'm playing, it's not a beautiful sound. I mean, that's not what this piece is about. Mozart, when we hear Mozart, we think of springs, settings, flowers, and that sort of thing. Of course not, things like the Requiem, but
right. But more lyrical.
Yeah, than, yeah. And this piece does have moments of that, but for the most part, I mean, there's a lot of sarcasm in it, and it's like take this, government.
Shostakovich's music is marked by a lot of quotes and a lot of the use of his musical monogram. And what that is if you take, if this is, now instead of saying do, re, mi, if you say C, D, E, F, G, A, B, C, well, this is a C, that means this is a D. Now, if this is an E flat, you can also call that an S in the German system. That's DS. And then this is a C, remember, as we establish. And then this is a B natural. B natural, that's four syllables. You can also, in German, say H. So, is DSCH, which are the first four letters of Shostakovich's name. And then, if you turn that sort of up, if you kind of invert that figure, instead of, you hear that they're related? Instead of, well, Bion starts the concerto off with those four notes. And that's really what you need to listen for when you're listening to this concerto, is that four-note signature, just the same as when you're listening to Beethoven's Fifth, you're listening for, that's very crucial to understand the Shostakovich concerto. Mm-hmm.
How often do you play this piece?
Well, not as often as Dvorak or Tchaikovsky. To me, it's really beautiful, expressive, beautiful in the sense of expressive language. But I think that a lot of presenters don't think that it's as easy to listen to as Tchaikovsky, Dvorak, Schumann, Saint-Saëns. So not as often, but certainly it deserves to be heard and yeah.
Have you all ever played this piece together before?
We've done it twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't come in cold, but
not at all.
You brought the musicians here into the game.
Right. Right.
Tell me a little bit about that process, and since you all had worked on it before, how you introduced the Louisville Orchestra to the piece and to your style, and how you prepared this together.
Well, the Louisville Orchestra, like any professional orchestra, I'm not sure if you're aware that they don't rehearse this for very long before we present it to the public. They're just four rehearsals. This week was unusual because there was only one 2.5-hour rehearsals and the other ones were two. There were two 2.5-hour rehearsals and then the other one. Two 2.5 and two 2-hour rehearsals. Oftentimes it's 3 2.5 and then 1 2-hour rehearsal. You can really feel the difference. And with this concerto, and if you're talking about an amateur orchestra, you might take a while to work it up. But with the Louisville Orchestra, we played it through the first time. It was already basically ready to perform for the public. And then it's a matter of fine-tuning it, and coordinating. There are always a few sections that are hard to coordinate. Those are the things you focus on in the rehearsal. You don't have time to play it 3 times, 4 times through. There's not time. There's not time.
And describe this piece from your perspective, playing with the orchestra. Some concertos you play sometimes as an ensemble member, sometimes in conflict with the orchestra. What's your relationship to the ensemble?
Oh, it's very well integrated. Right in the beginning, for example, da, 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 that's a cello part. Da, 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 dum, da, 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 dum. I can't quite sing. I'm sorry. I had bad pitch, but you hear the banter going on between it, right? I mentioned that I'm always having to think about projection, and that big for me I haven't really asked enough of my colleagues to take a census, but that's a real issue because I end up hearing a lot of myself, but at the same time I've got to make sure that I'm with the orchestra, and so. That's a real struggle, that I got to make sure that I'm projecting, but at the same time I'm with the orchestra because it's so much of it is completely glued together, and the first movement in particular is it's so rhythmic and constant eighth notes everywhere, and it's very easy to if you get off, you're off, it's right. Very obvious, right. So
okay. Do you all have any questions, thoughts that you'd like to ask?
We had two rehearsals on 2 days. That's it. For me, I like the orchestra to sleep twice between rehearsals. I like one rehearsal, sleep, two rehearsals, sleep, one rehearsal, sleep. I prefer that because I feel that this just going home and having a night to digest is very helpful.
Are we going to notice the difference?
it's a little bit like, did the stimulus work? It's impossible to know. It's really impossible to know. It's just impossible to know. I feel that this worked. It worked this way. And I feel that it works better the other way. But this is you play the cards that you're dealt, and we made the best out of this situation. I think we really maximized the rehearsal time that we had. We used every second of every rehearsal. Literally every second. And we finished, literally, I finished the last note of the Schumann Symphony, and the personal manager said, end of dress rehearsal, and that was it. Literally, it was down to the second, so.
Yeah.
Do you love playing with Shostakovich?
Yes and no. The music, I love, and the reward, when it works, I love, but it is hard.
Yeah. I saw another hand. Kathy?
You do obviously play the violin. You do also sing.
Yes. So I have a very promising career as a singer. They're not so related. I was like Bion. You know, Bion played the Boccherini Concerto with the New York Philharmonic when he was 11, and I played the Mendelssohn Concerto with the Boston Symphony when I was 11. And you have to start in this game. You have to start young. So by the time we were both going to, we both went to Harvard. By the time we both went to Harvard, we were both professional musicians before we went to Harvard. Bion took a semester off to compete in the Tchaikovsky competition. I never took a semester off, but I was gone a lot from school. For me, my personal choice had to do with the amount of reading I had to do. If you're a history major at Harvard, you have to read about 1,000 pages a week. And I knew that that would be impossible given the amount that I would practice. So I chose a science, something that would you'd have to read less. And you'd have to think a lot. And I enjoy physics. So,
you also got a degree from Yale. So how do you know?
No, I didn't. Oh, he did.
Oh, you did.
I did.
Okay, you went to Harvard and Yale.
I went to Harvard and Yale.
So how do you know who to cheer for?
Well, Harvard was the first school, and the rest of my family all went to Yale. So I like to root against Yale.
Any other questions?
Oh, I beg to differ with you about the being a throwaway. I completely disagree with you. It's one of the greatest symphonies that Mozart wrote, and it's never played. And the key of G and the key of C are absolutely related. And the key of E flat, G, G, C, and E flat are absolutely related. That makes a triad. I'm sorry, I disagree with you, the premise of your question.
But let's take part of it, though. I know that George Mester obviously has a plan for the season overall, but how much do you contribute to choosing this concert?
I chose every piece on this concert.
Okay.
And the reason I chose these pieces was that my mandate coming into this week was to, after the last time I had conducted the Louisville Orchestra, my job was to try to work with the orchestra in a way to really give the orchestra a very good workout, if mm-hmm. you will, a very good calisthenic, but also presenting just the best music. And for me, Schumann is so difficult for an orchestra to play well, as opposed to something like Tchaikovsky or even Shostakovich, mm-hmm. or a big romantic, late romantic German, Russian piece, because it's so delicate. It's like Mozart. It's so difficult. I chose the Mozart because it's Mozart. Mozart is the hardest thing to play for me as an orchestra. And the Shostakovich I chose, first of all, because I wanted to introduce Bion to the Louisville audiences, because I think he's one of the greatest cellists, the greatest living cellists, number one. But number two, I thought that the Shostakovich Cello Concerto is one of the most difficult accompaniments of a concerto. It's much more difficult than, say, the Dvorak or the Schumann Concerto or the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. It's just much harder. Everybody has to be on to play that. And so I thought these three difficult pieces would make a really challenging but fun program for the orchestra.
And these are also three pieces that don't get played all that often.
Let's see. The Mozart definitely doesn't get played much.
Right.
The Shostakovich gets played some.
Fair amount,
but maybe not in Louisville. Schumann is, for me, it's one of the greatest pieces ever written. So, I mean, I always jump at a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So say that one more time.
See, he uses his last name, B flat, A, C.
Right.
And B natural.
Yeah, what he's saying is that Shostakovich wasn't the only one to write musical monograms. Actually, there's a very famous part of the Brahms' First Symphony at the end of the second movement, which is this one. I don't know if you've heard this one. In the second movement of that symphony, there is this note inscribed all over the place, and it's really hard to find. It's in the second oboe, or it'll be in the violas or whatever. It's almost like a Where's Waldo exercise. It's quite fascinating. Should we talk about the Schumann?
Yes, let's do, because I don't want to short shift that. Now let's go back to where I had that great introduction about the Schumann earlier. You've got the lower strings that are sort of wandering, and then you've got the brass fanfare as a contrast showing the two conflicting sides of Schumann's personality.
Sure, absolutely.
It's an incredible beginning.
What Scott's talking about is you have a sandwich of some sort in the Schumann symphony. The brass part okay, that's the salami. And then you have that's the strings play that. And that's kind of the maybe one piece of bread. And then you have the winds. Ooh, sorry. That's the winds. And what you'll find when you listen tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to be listening to the winds, strings, and brass, because they're really segregated. They're really different. It's very modular. Think about it as Legos. There are the red Legos, the blue Legos, and the green Legos. And you know, in a lot of pieces, for example, when you have, what's a good example? When you have that music and it occurs in the Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, everybody gets to play that. The flutes get to play that. The violins get to play that. Cellos start. Okay, in this Schumann piece, he really keeps the music separate. So, for example, if I'm a violinist in the Louisville Orchestra tonight, I'm not going to get to play. I don't get to play that because I don't hold a trumpet in my hand. Mm-hmm. And you can almost think of them as being three characters. You can think of this as being the spiritual, and then the string music as being maybe perhaps the terrestrial, and then the woodwinds as being say the romantic. So they each have their own role, both in the symphony, in the structure of the symphony, but also emotionally. And that's one of the reasons I find this symphony so thrilling to perform.
Yeah. Now that compartmentalization,
that's the perfect word for it, Scott,
is often seen as a failing of Schumann's in his orchestration. He's mm-hmm. not considered to be a great orchestrator, or right. wasn't for a long time.
Right.
Now I'm going to guess that you're going to disagree with that.
No, I do agree with you, Scott, that he wasn't a great orchestrator, not necessarily only for that reason. Mm-hmm. Some people actually criticize Schumann's music because everybody is playing everything all the time. The third Schumann symphony, you know who's playing that? Everybody. The flutes are playing it, the oboes are playing, clarinets, bassoons, trumpets, trombones, violins, violas, cellos, and bass. Everybody plays that. And so it's kind of like this soup. And this symphony has that as well. But what we did this week with the Louisville Orchestra, well, first of all, the orchestra is actually playing off my own personal orchestral parts, and I've altered them. So instead of people playing in a let's say at letter C, the first violins play. People play piano. Instead of the first clarinet playing nothing. They are now playing what the flute has because I know that the flute needs help. I've changed things, a lot of things, probably 100 things in the orchestration so that it's more easily hurt and actually more like 500 things in the orchestration.
And we should point out that's not new.
It's
composers
not new at all.
Have been reorchestrating Schumann almost since it was published.
Yes, actually Mahler reorchestrated Schumann and published his reorchestrations. And there's actually a recording. I just found this out about, I don't know, half a year ago. There's a recording of Mahler's reorchestration of Schumann, which I kind of would like to hear. That's pretty
yeah.
That's pretty neat. What is reorchestration? By the way, sorry, we keep throwing around this jargon, and it may be a little bit gobbledygook for you people. Jargon is the orchestration means, okay, when you sing Silent Night, you want to sing it with maybe an organ or a piano, right? If you have a 76-piece marching band with a snare drum, that's not a good choice to accompany Silent. We can agree on that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's on the tasteless side. And then on the tasteful side might be singing it with two flutes and two oboes and two clarinets and an organ and maybe a harp. That would be very pretty. Okay, so every composer has two jobs. They think up the tune. Okay, that's a good idea. Let me write some more. Okay, that's a really good idea. Now, are they going to have... Okay, now, multiple choice. Are you going to have the violins, violas, cellos, and basses play that? Are you going to have 15 kazoos, a fire hydrant, and a triangle play that? Or are you going to have a rock guitar play that? Okay, well, obviously, you're going to have violins and violas and cellos and basses to play that because aesthetically, that's what's pleasing to us, to our ears. I think that in Schumann's case, he tended to think in overall sound. So he thought, well, instead of thinking about, I want to hear the oboe, he was thinking, I want to hear sound, and I want one part oboe, and he's like brewing it, right? He's making a witch's, like a brew, okay. One part oboe, okay, I want a little bit more of a delicate mixture. I'm going to pour in a flute. Okay, no trombones, definitely no trombones, okay. Okay, violins, good, but no violas. That makes it too dark, and then a bass. That's the kind of decision that Schumann would make. It's very subtle.
An interesting note about this piece, too, it's very manic in its composition because he did it in 3 weeks.
Right. Schumann was very depressed. Well, Schumann actually died. I don't know if you're aware. He died in an institution. He made a suicide attempt, and then he voluntarily checked himself into an insane asylum. And, of course, it's ironic that Schumann's greatest fear was insane asylums. So it's a very tragic story with Schumann. When he wrote this piece in 1846, he was already starting to hear things and not feel well, and he was very disturbed. And he was not able to compose. And at one point, sort of the clouds parted, and he thought, huh, I feel pretty good. And he went on a tear, and he wrote this piece in 3 weeks, which if you think about how long it would take to write down this piece, not think it up, just write it down. The score is, I think, 220 pages long. Okay, if you wanted to copy that, I think it would take you 3 weeks at least. He wrote it down in three. See, this is the thing that just astonishes me, that these guys can think this stuff up and write it with such speed. It's just fabulous. Incredible.
William, did you have something? No? Okay, well, thank you very
much
for being here.
Thank you
so much for being here. And thank all of you for being here. Enjoy the concert.